a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young sitting in with you this evening for another hour. Hey, we had a great first hour tonight. It was great to hear from you. Phone calls, texts. In fact, I think I got carpal tunnel typing all those responses to the texts that came in. I wonder if I can file a workers' compensation claim against CamelX if I get carpal tunnel responding to text messages. I'll have to do some legal research on that. I will get back to you on that later. But if you want to be a part of the show, phone lines are open this hour, as is the text line, 314-436-7900. Ed's been holding through the break. Ed, welcome to CamelX.
Will you stop complaining? What's a little carpal tunnel?
This sounds like Ed Golterman. Good to hear from you, my friend.
Well, thank you. And it was really in order to wait. I mean, you had some really good things going that past hour. There's a dichotomy here. There's a conflict that I'm really concerned about, and that is over the last decade, let's say from 2010 on, when the Cardinals opened Village and the Blues reopened Kiel Opera House. The owners of those franchises have banked $1 billion each in increased value of assets and actual cash. And over the years, the people of St. Louis County have been their most loyal fans. But more than that, a tremendous amount of tax money in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And St. Louis County government is in deep deep financial problem, much deeper than we are aware of. And many of the municipalities are in deep financial trouble. And I used the word bankruptcy at council the other night, and nobody nodded. I want to ask my friend Ron at Stiefel, talk with the owners and say, look, how about we give this Rams settlement money to St. Louis County? Let them pay down, you know, some of this debt. Let the people have a few more bucks to spend the money in the county. They've really done a lot for us. And, you know, maybe we can do without that.
Well, that raises a question, Ed. So let's talk about what you just said here. I looked up the numbers. The amount of money that the county received from the Rams settlement money is $169 million. The city received $280 million, and the St. Louis Regional Convention and Sports Authority received $70 million. Now, before we jump into this, Ed, I do have to tell you, the lawyers for the county and the city and the sports authority, they got about $250 million for this lawsuit. And I want to tell you, as my wife tells me all the time, it's always good when the lawyers get paid. That's my wife's favorite saying. But
okay.
All right. So usually I get a laugh out of that. Is this thing on?
Yeah.
But it, sorry. There you go. My goodness, I got to ask for the laughs. So, but okay. Ed, but if you look at the county money, what do you think that money should go towards? The county got roughly, let's say, $170 million. Should that be used to pay down debts that we've already incurred? Is that transformational? I mean, when you get a one-time check for $170 million, it seems like you should do something with it more than just pay down debt.
Well, that would be to relieve them of current debt and to prevent others. No, I'm not saying it should all go there. What I'm saying is, though, that the county got screwed on those numbers. The county should have gotten, you know, the two-thirds,
right. Because
the county has funded all this stuff.
Yes.
Dollar for dollar, three or four times that of the city. So really, I'm so disappointed that the county officials didn't go after that money. And that's just the first one I have. And I'm going to be back with more. But there are no audits, so we don't know how much they're paying. There was a councilman named Skip Mange years ago.
Sure.
And he was worried that some year the hotel motel tax could not cover the sports debt. And I just wonder if some year they didn't and if they've had to go into general revenue. We really need more.
We do. Transparency. We need more transparency. Yeah, there's no question. Because right now it's about as transparent as concrete. And And we need greater transparency. I've got to move on here, but let me just add this in, Ed, before we drop this topic, and that is this. It looks like the city received an extra $110 million more than the county, and I agree with you. That is not representative of the financial investment that was made to lure the Rams here and to try to keep the Rams here. Those numbers should have been flipped, and they weren't. The county should have gotten more. They didn't. I don't know the details of that. But frankly, I would like to see the county take that money, invest it, and then use the interest from that $170 million investment to do different projects with that investment money, whether hire more police, do more issues with repairing roads. You could have a revolving basket of issues that could be resolved, and you never spend down the principal. It would simply be using the interest for that money, and that would go into infinity.
Well, I'll go with you on that now. You just brought me along, but then who's going to guard the money?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, that would go to the St. Louis County Council and the county executive, and I don't know that I'd trade dollars with our current county executive. Ed, hey, thanks for calling in this evening.
Yeah.
We've got some other callers here. I'm going to go ahead and go with Chris, Kyle. If you don't mind, I'm going to hold off on this break. I don't want Chris to have to hold through the break. Chris, welcome to Camel Wax.
What's up there, Perry Mason?
Good to talk to you, sir.
Hey, Brad, just a few things, and I love talking to you, man. You do a great job.
Thank you.
Comatose Joe, I watched I maybe 3 or 4 minutes at the most, to like a total of 2 times. I just can't. I despise the guy. I don't wish him poor health, but I just don't. With all the flood of illegals that have come into this country, it makes me sick. And I don't think the man, it's like somebody else was running the country. I just wonder, you know, he just had too many advisors around him, and he didn't really know what's going on.
Okay, you know? Well, but the speech, the one thing about his speech that I did like, I will tell you this, I liked the tone of his speech. I like the fact that it seemed very conciliatory, that it was very clear that he didn't want to drop out, but he did. And he wants to unite the people. He does. And I always like that better than bomb throwing. There was some vision casting there, although I have some issues with the vision casting that he did in that last speech. But it was obviously abundantly clear here, Chris, that this was not his own idea or his own desire.
Yeah, he did. Well, Brad, I think he definitely has handlers. And since I'm calling from the People's Republic of Illinois, I don't think a pickle face Pritzker would make a very good vice president. I just see he's torpedoing the condition of this state. And I just, for his own benefit, and I don't care for the man. And I don't know if Kamala Harris really has much to brag about with Biden's record with the, you know, the economy's not that great. And just with the flood of illegals and, you know, and not every one of them is a criminal, mind you, Brad, but there have been a lot of assaults and deaths that are coming at the hands of illegal aliens, and I just they're not all saints, you know.
And that's why I'm all in favor of legal immigration, because you can vet right. those people out. I'm a big proponent of legal immigration. However, I'm a strong opponent to illegal immigration. And Chris, you just touched on one of many reasons why that's the case. Chris, we got to take a break here. We're coming up on a break. Thanks so much for calling in this evening, and great to talk to you. We're going to move on to some different topics this evening, particularly the guaranteed basic income issue that was raised by a judge this week here in St. Louis, and what the judge ruled and why it impacts you. Brad Young at your service on KMOX. Welcome back to At Your Service. Thanks for all the texts tonight. We're getting a lot of great texts in this evening, and I always love hearing from you. Phone lines are open, any topic. Doesn't matter, whatever floats your boat, 314-436-7900. One of the things that's kind of slipped under the radar, because listen, we are in a news cycle right now nationally that it oftentimes dwarfs local stories. Because there's only, like, for example, if you're watching TV, there's only 30 minutes of news, and a lot of that's got to be sports and weather. Limited time, right? If you're listening to the top of the hour on Camo X, there's a limited amount of time. They've got to squeeze in lots of things. But one of the local issues that I think is extremely important is this issue regarding guaranteed basic income. Now, just to give you a really brief primer on what that is, guaranteed basic income generally is this theory that we could just send money to individuals, not for services rendered, not for any other reason than just to send them money and to say, here, God bless you. Here you go. Hope this helps you. And hopefully it'll improve our community. St. Louis passed a statute, an ordinance here. This was approved, I believe, a year ago. It was approved in St. Louis by a vote of 21-1. In the Board of Aldermen. It was signed into law by Tashara Jones. And what it did was is this. It took payments of $500, would be made $500 a month, would be made for 18 months. And this was how the city wanted to use the balance of $52 million in federal pandemic aid that was allocated to the city. So the city said that $52 million that we got from COVID money from the federal government, we're just going to give it away. We're going to send checks for $500 a month to individuals who sign up for the program. And last week, there was a lawsuit filed stating that that ordinance, that desire, that program just to give away $500 a month to individuals violates the Missouri Constitution. There's a provision in the Missouri Constitution that it essentially states, I'm not quoting it, but I'm paraphrasing, That provision of the Constitution states that no city or municipality is empowered to give money to any private individuals, I believe, and there was a catchphrase there, without benefit to the city. So in other words, the point of that constitutional clause in the Missouri Constitution was to state that unless you're doing work for the city, if you're repairing the streets, we're going to pay you. If you're a city employee performing work for the city, we're going to pay you. But you can't just give away money. So a lawsuit was filed to challenge this $52 million giveaway by the city of St. Louis. And the lawsuit alleged that it, of course, violated the constitutional provision that I just quoted. Earlier, I believe it was at the end of the week last week, I believe it was Friday, a judge issued what's called a temporary restraining order. And the judge issued it in favor of the plaintiff. His name is Fred Hale, I believe is his name. And the temporary restraining order prohibited the city from sending out any additional checks for a period of 15 days while the judge was reviewing the evidence and is going to presumably issue an order on whether or not this payment program violates the Missouri Constitution. Put a 15-day pause on this. And that 15-day pause was designed to stop the city temporarily, not permanently, but temporarily, from issuing the next batch of checks that were due to go out at the end of July. That batch of checks would have been approximately $250,000. I don't remember the exact dollar amount to the penny, but it was in the neighborhood of $250,000. That's how much the city sends out every month to individuals in the city for no real reason. So the city's response to this lawsuit has been to argue that it is for the benefit of the city, because if we can keep people out of poverty, if we can keep people from filing bankruptcy, if we can help people to pay their bills, that the city benefits from that. And so it isn't a payment for no benefit. It's a payment for the benefit of the city of St. Louis as a whole by sending this money out to individuals who otherwise cannot pay their bills. So that's the position that the parties are in here in terms of why they're doing it, what the court has ruled, and what I think the court will rule. Now, here's what's important. The standard, I've litigated these things many times. The standard for a temporary restraining order is this. A judge will issue what's called a TRO in situations where the judge believes the party is reasonably likely to succeed on the merits. Now, what does that mean? That is lawyer speak for the judge will issue a TRO for somebody that the judge thinks is going to win anyway, but we're going to put things on hold until I can write an opinion that justifies what I'm doing right now. That's the reality of what is going to happen. So the judge, I believe it was Judge White, issued that temporary restraining order because he was trying to prevent the city from issuing that $250,000 until he could write a real opinion justifying his decision. So I believe when that 15-day TRO is over, the judge is going to rule that this program is unconstitutional. And that's going to trigger an immediate appeal. This will go up on appeal. We'll see it from the Missouri Court of Appeals. We'll see it going probably to the Missouri Supreme Court. And I've filed many briefs over the years on cases with the Missouri Supreme Court. And I can tell you that that is not a quick process. It is a very, very slow process. But it begs the question, and this is what I want to open the phone lines up to. I know I have my opinions on it, but I want to hear from you. Should the city, given that the city's not flush with cash, I mean, this is not like a Mark Zuckerberg saying he's going to give away $52 million. I mean, for Mark Zuckerberg, that's beer money, okay? But for the city of St. Louis, which is deep in debt, which is losing funds, which can't pay its own police officers, at every turn, they can't pay to pick up the trash. They can't pay to repair the streets. Is it a good use of city money to simply give away $52 million with no benefit, no tangible benefit coming back to the city? Is that a good idea or is that a bad idea from your perspective? 314-436-7900 at your service. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young in with you this evening. We've got some calls here. We're going to get to the phone lines. Gary's been holding through the break. Gary, welcome to Camo X.
Hey, can you hear me?
I can hear you just perfectly, and I'm not even on a Verizon phone.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's good to talk to you, sir.
You too. Let me ask you, what was the name of the basic income they had going in the city? What would you call that? You only said it one time.
Yeah, it's called Guaranteed Basic Income, GBI. It's an idea that is gaining traction mostly in blue states and blue areas. California, several cities in California are attempting it. They're obviously very controversial for obvious reasons, but this is the first attempt at this idea in the state of Missouri. And right now, I think it's precarious in terms of its ability to withstand a legal challenge.
Yeah, I think it's in blue cities more than it is just complete blue states. I think
yes.
Blue cities. But they want to go from that BI to universal basic income, which is universal, you know, basic income for everybody from the poor all the way to the rich, because they want to create two classes in which is just the rich and the poor. So like we had this, this internet crash the other day.
Sure.
So when that affects the banks and you can no longer get your money, the wealth transfer, when they steal all your money, you know, when you have no more money in the bank, whether you're rich or you're poor, they're going to be like, well, we have UBI. We can give you $2,000, but you got to do this if you want to collect on the $2,000 when you're out of money. Same thing, the people in Lanai, Hawaii up there, they're still waiting for money, you know.
Sure.
And so people think it can't happen. But do you know who you've heard of BlackRock, right?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. The big corporation, they own a lot of rental property and they run all of other. I forgot all of the elements that come under the auspices of BlackRock. But yes, they're famous or infamous, depending on your perspective.
Yeah. So the CEO of BlackRock is Larry Fink. And Jamie Dimon is the CEO of Chase Bank. You know mm-hmm. that already.
Oh, yeah. He's a big deal.
So RFK Jr. came out in a presser, 2 days ago, and he said that Trump announced that he was going to make Larry Fink his head of the Treasury. When he gets in office, he's going to make Jamie Dimon head of Commerce, the Secretary of Commerce. And this is quoting RFK Jr., that Trump did announce that. So they're going to create only two classes. That's going to be the upper echelon rich and then poverty. And you're going to be forced to be on UBI because you're not going to have a choice when they steal your money out of the bank. You're going to need something. Okay. They're going to say, here's $2,000.
Right. Well, Gary, I want to unpack a lot of what you're saying here. First of all, I don't think any of this could be done on a national level under a universal basic income. None of this could be done unless
even with the internet crash.
No, it could not be done. Hear me out, Gary. None of this could be done unless Congress passed a law and the president signed it into law. I promise you, this could not be done by executive order. It could not be done by an executive order. So do you really think that the current Congress or the Senate would ever pass a law that creates universal basic income where you're just paying individuals for no services rendered? Do you think that would ever happen?
Well, number one, I don't put anything past them to begin with. And number two, if all the internet went down and they said, well, look, you can't get access to your bank. I'm sorry. There's nothing to pass. The internet's down for everybody, except for maybe Congress. They got their backup phones. But I mean, to think it can't happen, we just had a major internet interruption 2 days ago.
Right. But that major internet interruption really didn't. It affected people from a perspective of they're going to have some canceled flights and it's going to be some interruptions in terms of how you get through the day. But it didn't bring our society down, crashing down. I mean, banks still had money. You could still go to the bank and get access to your funds. Even if you couldn't, it was only for a day or so. It wasn't anything big. But let's get back to the policy idea. I mean, do you have a problem with this idea of whether it's guaranteed basic income or universal basic income, where basically the government is giving away money? Do you have a problem with that conceptually?
I do. I work very hard. I pay a lot of taxes, and I have a problem with it, but I can see the bigger spectrum is that this is just a fishing test. See how it works in these little blue cities, mm-hmm. and then see how it goes nationally, federally. And I'm sorry, it's going to happen. It's definitely going to happen.
Okay. Well, I don't think it's going to
happen in a world where they just flip the switch and internet's gone.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen in the city of St. Louis because I do see the court ruling that this is unconstitutional. And I don't see the Missouri Court of Appeals, doing anything but upholding the idea that guaranteed basic income violates the Missouri Constitution. Gary, we got some other folks holding. I want to let you go. Thanks so much for calling in this evening. We also have Larry is holding. Hey, Larry. Good evening, sir.
Brad, how are you?
I knew that was you, my friend. Good to hear your voice.
You know, I listen to you on 97.1. I'm retired, so I have a lot of time to kill. You're a fountain of information. I love listening to you speak.
Well, some people say a fountain of information, and some people say it's a fountain of fecal matter. So I guess it depends on your perspective, doesn't it?
they're confused. They're confused just like your prior caller's confused.
Okay.
Well, anyways.
What's on your mind?
Here's my question.
Yes.
So Dick Cheney made it quite clear that Donald Trump is a threat to democracy. His daughter also made the same threat. She brought him before court. Right?
Sure. There was a lot of people who did say and continue to say that Donald Trump is a threat to democracy.
Okay. So this Cheadle gal, who is the head of the Secret Service agent, she worked for Dick Cheney at one point.
Okay. She also worked for Obama as well. She was on the actual presidential team that protected President Obama when he was president.
So she worked for Dick Cheney. So we have the Cheneys are definitely against Donald Trump. And my position on this is I think they ought to subpoena Liz Cheney because I don't know if probably I would get a lot of a disagreement with a lot of folks. It almost looks to me like they stood down. I'm sorry to say it, but they had information prior to the shots coming out. And it was 2 or 3 minutes, and President Trump never should have taken the stage. I just really have, you know, I've read about, I just got through reading a 700-page book on the Assassination Chronicles. It's about It was about John F. Kennedy. It's the 27th book I've read on the assassination of Kennedy.
You are very well read, Larry. So what did you get out of it?
So what I get out of it is a delusion is a strong belief or conviction despite superior evidence to the contrary. I actually believe that in the Kennedy assassination, I think the administrators controlled the narrative, and I think the administrators were in on it.
So that's all right, but get to the point here about President Trump here. What's your overall theory here, and then we'll move on.
I think that Liz Cheney should be questioned. And Cheadle, you know, we know Cheadle. You had to work, so you didn't. I watched the whole 2.5 hours. It was terrible. She didn't answer anything.
No, and I read the highlights. I read the highlights on that, Larry. So I'm very familiar with what she testified to, and what she refused to testify to, which is even greater.
Absolutely. So are you happy with the way this investigation is going?
Well, right now, I can't say that I'm happy with it or not happy with it because it's just getting off the ground. I mean, we saw even today, Congress, I believe Mike Johnson even said that there's going to be a formal, not just a congressional hearing, but a formal investigation into this. And I think it should be there. But I think, and here's where you and I might slightly differ on this, Larry. I'm not sure that there's a conspiracy here, but here's what I will tell you, that the Secret Service has some huge questions to answer. For example, and you highlighted one of them, why was President Trump allowed to take the stage? Because the Secret Service was made aware, number one, that there was a suspicious individual. Number two, that there were reports of an incident. Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young in with you this evening. We've got some calls here. We're going to get to the phone lines. Gary's been holding through the break. Gary, welcome to Camo X.
Hey, can you hear me?
I can hear you just perfectly, and I'm not even on a Verizon phone.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's good to talk to you, sir.
You too. Let me ask you, what was the name of the basic income they had going in the city? What would you call that? You only said it one time.
Yeah, it's called Guaranteed Basic Income, GBI. It's an idea that is gaining traction mostly in blue states and blue areas. California, several cities in California are attempting it. They're obviously very controversial for obvious reasons, but this is the first attempt at this idea in the state of Missouri. And right now, I think it's precarious in terms of its ability to withstand a legal challenge.
Yeah, I think it's in blue cities more than it is just complete blue states. I think just blue cities. But they want to go from that BI to universal basic income, which is universal, you know, basic income for everybody from the poor all the way to the rich, because they want to create two classes in which is just the rich and the poor. So like we had this, this internet crash the other day.
Sure.
So when that affects the banks and you can no longer get your money, the wealth transfer, when they steal all your money, you know, when you have no more money in the bank, whether you're rich or you're poor, they're going to be like, well, we have UBI. We can give you $2,000, but you got to do this if you want to collect on the $2,000 when you're out of money. Same thing, the people in Lanai, Hawaii up there, they're still waiting for money, you know.
Sure.
And so people think it can't happen. But do you know who you've heard of BlackRock, right?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. The big corporation, they own a lot of rental property and they run all of other. I forgot all of the elements that come under the auspices of BlackRock. But yes, they're famous or infamous, depending on your perspective.
Yeah. So the CEO of BlackRock is Larry Fink. And Jamie Dimon is the CEO of Chase Bank. You know that already.
Oh, yeah. He's a big deal.
So RFK Jr. came out in a presser, 2 days ago, and he said that Trump announced that he was going to make Larry Fink his head of the Treasury. When he gets in office, he's going to make Jamie Dimon head of Commerce, the Secretary of Commerce. And this is quoting RFK Jr., that Trump did announce that. So they're going to create only two classes. That's going to be the upper echelon rich and then poverty. And you're going to be forced to be on UBI because you're not going to have a choice when they steal your money out of the bank.
you're going to need something. Okay. They're going to say, here, here's $2,000.
Right. Well, Gary, I want to unpack a lot of what you're saying here. First of all, I don't think any of this could be done on a national level under a universal basic income. None of this could be done unless
even with the internet crash.
No, it could not be done. Well, hear me out, Gary. None of this could be done unless Congress passed a law and the president signed it into law. I promise you, this could not be done by executive order. It could not be done by an executive order. So do you really think that the current Congress or the Senate would ever pass a law that creates universal basic income where you're just paying individuals for no services rendered? Do you think that would ever happen?
Well, number one, I don't put anything past them to begin with. And number two, if the internet, all the internet went down and they said, well, look, you can't get access to your bank. I'm sorry. There's nothing to pass. The internet's down for everybody, except for maybe Congress. They got their backup phones. But I mean, to think it can't happen, we just had a major internet interruption 2 days ago.
Right. But that major internet interruption really didn't, I mean, it affected people from a perspective of they're going to have some canceled flights and it's going to be some interruptions in terms of how you get through the day. But it didn't bring our society down, crashing down. I mean, banks still had money. You could still go to the bank and get access to your funds. Even if you couldn't, it was only for a day or so. It wasn't anything big. But let's get back to the policy idea. I mean, do you have a problem? Do you have a problem with this idea of whether it's guaranteed basic income or universal basic income, where basically the government is giving away money? Do you have a problem with that conceptually?
I do. I work very hard. I pay a lot of taxes, and I have a problem with it. But I can see the bigger spectrum is that this is just a fishing test. See how it works in these little blue cities, mm-hmm. and then see how it goes nationally, federally. And I'm sorry, it's going to happen. It's definitely going to happen.
Okay. Well, I don't think it's going to
world where they just flip the switch and internet's gone.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen in the city of St. Louis, because I do see the court ruling that this is unconstitutional, and I don't see the Missouri Court of Appeals doing anything but upholding the idea that guaranteed basic income violates the Missouri Constitution. Gary, we got some other folks holding. I want to let you go. Thanks so much for calling in this evening. We also have Larry is holding. Hey, Larry. Good evening, sir.
Brett, how are you?
I knew that was you, my friend. Good to hear your voice.
You know, I listen to you on 97.1. I'm retired, so I have a lot of time to kill. You're a fountain of information. I love listening to you speak.
Well, some people say a fountain of information, and some people say it's a fountain of fecal matter. So I guess it depends on your perspective, doesn't it?
they're confused. They're confused just like your prior caller's confused.
Okay.
Well, anyways.
What's on your mind?
Here's my question.
Yes.
So Dick Cheney made it quite clear that Donald Trump is a threat to democracy. His daughter also made the same threat. She brought him before court. Right?
Sure. There was a lot of people who did say and continue to say that Donald Trump is a threat to democracy.
Okay. So this Cheadle gal, who is the head of the Secret Service agent, she worked for Dick Cheney at one point.
Okay. She also worked for Obama as well. She was on the actual presidential team that protected President Obama when he was president.
So she worked for Dick Cheney. So we have the Cheneys are definitely against Donald Trump. And my position on this is I think they ought to subpoena Liz Cheney, because I would get a lot of disagreement with a lot of folks. It almost looks to me like they stood down. I'm sorry to say it, but they had information prior to the shots coming out. And it was 2 or 3 minutes, and President Trump never should have taken the stage. I just got through reading a 700-page book on the Assassination Chronicles. It was about John F. Kennedy. It's the 27th book I've read on the assassination of Kennedy.
You are very well read, Larry. So what did you get out of it?
So what I get out of it is a delusion is a strong belief or conviction
despite superior evidence to the contrary. I actually believe that in the Kennedy assassination, I think the administrators controlled the narrative, and I think the administrators were in on it.
So that's all right, but get to the point here about President Trump here. What's your overall theory here, and then we'll move on.
I think that Liz Cheney should be questioned.
Mm-hmm.
And Cheadle, we know Cheadle. You had to work, so you didn't. I watched the whole 2.5 hours. It was terrible. She didn't answer anything.
No, and I read the highlights. I read the highlights on that, Larry. So I'm very familiar with what she testified to, and what she refused to testify to, which is even greater.
Absolutely. So are you happy with the way this investigation is going?
Well, right now, I can't say that I'm happy with it or not happy with it because it's just getting off the ground. I mean, we saw even today, Congress, I believe Mike Johnson even said that there's going to be a formal, not just a congressional hearing, but a formal investigation into this. And I think it should be there. But I think, and here's where you and I might slightly differ on this, Larry. I'm not sure that there's a conspiracy here, but here's what I will tell you, that the Secret Service has some huge questions to answer. For example, and you highlighted one of them, why was President Trump allowed to take the stage? Because the Secret Service was made aware, number one, that there was a suspicious individual. Number two, that there were reports of an individual with a gun, and the Secret Service knew that before President Trump took the stage. So in that scenario, why would you ever let the guy take the stage? Why couldn't they have simply said, I'm sorry, Mr. Trump, you're going to have to wait 5 minutes. I know you're ready to get out there. I know you're excited. You need to wait 5 minutes while we check out this possible threat, and then we'll let you go on. That should have been the protocol, but it wasn't. Number two, the question is, even though that sloped roof was identified by the Secret Service as a potential threat location, why did they then not ensure or require that the police post someone on that roof and not just tell the police, oh, you guys just make sure you guard the area, but there was no follow-up? There should have been a requirement that there was a police officer at any location that's a potential threat as a shooting location to shoot the president. They didn't do that. Those are questions that have to be answered.
Brad, there was no pitch to that roof. They showed like 10 Republicans walking around on it the other day. I mean, it was unbelievable. Did you know in the Kennedy assassination that the Secret Service stayed out to 3 to 5 o'clock in the morning, and they had to report for duty at 8 o'clock in the morning? They were out partying and drinking till 3 and 5 o'clock in the morning. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Wow.
I've read that. I don't know that that was the case here, but there are enormous questions that have to be answered. I mean, I was seeing photographs, Larry, of the chain link fence that was surrounded that area where President Trump was speaking, and the gates were so called locked with plastic zip ties. Now, what kind of a security system is a plastic zip tie? It's absurd and ridiculous, and the Secret Service needs to answer. I'm glad that the head of the Secret Service, Cheadle, resigned. She should have resigned immediately, and the fact that she should have gotten fired. Yeah, but the Biden team was never going to do that because obviously the optics of firing a woman, they didn't want to deal with that. But she should have been fired. But at least she's gone. But my hope is that through this congressional investigation, reforms are done so that the next person who occupies the office of the presidency doesn't have their life at risk because of the lackadaisical security attitudes of the U.S. Secret Service. Larry, we're coming up on a hard break here.
Concur. Thank you, Brad.
Got to let you go, my friend. Thanks, as always, for listening and calling in this evening. 314-436-7900. I've got some texts here about the guaranteed basic income. I'll get to those texts and more of your calls next on KMOX. Fastest 2 hours in radio at your service here on Wednesday nights on KMOX. Thanks for being a part of the show. We've had great calls tonight, lots of great texts. Thanks for being a part of making KMOX literally the voice of St. Louis. That's not just a tagline. That's not just a slogan. When you participate in this show, your voice is literally part of the voice of St. Louis. So thank you for your participation this evening. I had had a couple of texts that I want to make sure that we get to before the show is over. I've been trying to respond to a lot of these. One person had actually two views that I think are a fantastic summary of some of the issues we're talking about with this guaranteed basic income. And one is, a person says, I can understand childcare, I can understand nutritional or health assistance, but never just straight cash. And that raises an excellent point. You know, we've all heard that phrase quid pro quo, something, you know, get something for something. And there's a lot of truth to that. And I can see assistance programs for childcare. Raising kids is expensive, particularly if you're in poverty, particularly if you have to pay for childcare. You know, for so many low-income workers, if they don't have childcare assistance, then if they can't pay for childcare, they can't go out and get a job. And you're in the position of saying to this person, well, why don't you go out and get a job? And they say, well, I can't because I have kids. So in order to help them go out and get a job and to be productive and to increase their standard of living, assisting them with childcare to me is not overly burdensome. But when you just simply say to someone, I'm just flat going to give you cash, no strings attached, I don't care what you do with it. First of all, there's no accountability. Secondly, do we really receive a benefit as a society for that? But there's a lot of reasons going down the road, particularly when it comes to, is that the best use of the resources in the city of St. Louis? Think about the situation with the city. The court has ruled a few months ago that the city has to refund all the city earnings tax. Listen, I pay a city earnings tax. I've paid a city earnings tax since 1992. I've paid a city earnings tax. So I understand what's that about and the theory behind it. But for those who did not work in the city during COVID and started working remotely, all of those individuals are entitled to a refund of the city earnings tax that they paid. In other words, the city tried to keep the city earnings tax even though you weren't really working in the city. And that, to me, is a position that is indefensible. Because the idea of the city earnings tax is this, that if you benefit, like, for example, I'm right here, KMOX Studios, downtown St. Louis. I'm driving on roads that are paid for by the city. I ostensibly have the protection of the St. Louis Police Department if they will respond. The fire department is here. I'm benefiting from city services. So why should I not pay for those? I don't have a problem with that. What I do have a problem with is if you were a remote worker living in, say, Creve Coeur and working remotely during COVID, why should you have to pay a city earnings tax? You're not benefiting from police services. You're not benefiting from fire protection. You're not driving on city roads. You're not consuming city water. You're not doing any of those things that would justify taking your tax dollars for using benefits and services provided by the city. But the city wanted to keep it. It took the court to stop that. I'm glad they did. But the city is going to lose hundreds of millions of dollars as a result of those city earnings tax refunds that have to go out to individuals who apply for it. You've got the city crime issues. We have the problems, and of course, that's the number one city issue right now is crime. Crime is going down in certain areas in terms of murders and other things, but it certainly isn't going away. And it's also shifting to different areas of the city. And we can't hire enough police officers. Why? Because the city says we can't afford to pay police in the city what they can go out and earn in the county or other municipalities. So then why are we giving away $52 million to individuals for no benefit to the city? Couldn't we apply that money towards increasing pay for police? Couldn't we put that money towards increasing pay for firefighters? Because when the city has a crime problem, which we do, the nation knows about this. The city of St. Louis is infamous for being the crime capital of the country. How many businesses would love to relocate to the city, but they're afraid to because of crime? How many? And that is an issue that could be resolved or at least could be mitigated by putting that $52 million, paying it to the police, instead of simply giving it away. And the other problem that I have with this idea of guaranteed basic income or universal basic income is this. Doesn't it create within the mindset of those who receive that money? Doesn't it create this idea that you're now dependent on the government? You're dependent on the government. It reduces your incentive to go out, and you no longer are required. And you say, well, it's only $500 a month, Brad. Come on, you're not going to be dependent on the government for $500. But it's a mindset. It's a mindset that says, I can only exist if the government gives me money. And that's an awful mindset for a culture, for a country, for a capitalistic society that says you need to go out and earn and make it yourself. And it's a problem to say, I'm just going to sit back and rely on the government. And here's a great example. You remember Pruitt-Igoe? I got to wrap this up quickly. Pruitt-Igoe gave housing to individuals, and what happened? They burned them to the ground. Contrast that with Habitat for Humanity that says you have to put in sweat equity and you have to have a small mortgage, and then we'll give you a house. Why? Because you got to have some skin in the game. Habitat for Humanity works. Pruitt-Igoe did not. The difference is involvement. And giving money away with no expectation of a return creates dependency without creating independence. And that, to me, is the biggest problem with guaranteed basic income. Brad Young in tonight on At Your Service. Stick around for the best of Dave Glover. I will talk to you next Wednesday night right here on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. KMOX. Fastest 2 hours in radio at your service here on Wednesday nights on KMOX. Thanks for being a part of the show. We've had great calls tonight, lots of great texts. Thanks for being a part of making KMOX literally the voice of St. Louis. That's not just a tagline. That's not just a slogan. When you participate in this show, your voice is literally part of the voice of St. Louis. So thank you for your participation this evening. I had a couple of texts that I want to make sure that we get to before the show is over. I've been trying to respond to a lot of these. One person had actually two views that I think are a fantastic summary of some of the issues we're talking about with this guaranteed basic income. And one is, a person says, I can understand childcare, I can understand nutritional or health assistance, but never just straight cash. And that raises an excellent point. You know, we've all heard that phrase quid pro quo, something, you know, get something for something. And there's a lot of truth to that. And I can see assistance programs for childcare. Raising kids is expensive, particularly if you're in poverty, particularly if you have to pay for childcare. You know, for so many low-income workers, if they don't have childcare assistance, then if they can't pay for childcare, they can't go out and get a job. And you're in the position of saying to this person, well, why don't you go out and get a job? And they say, well, I can't because I have kids. So in order to help them go out and get a job and to be productive and to increase their standard of living, assisting them with childcare to me is not overly burdensome. But when you just simply say to someone, I'm just flat going to give you cash, no strings attached, I don't care what you do with it. First of all, there's no accountability. Secondly, do we really receive a benefit as a society for that? But there's a lot of reasons going down the road, particularly when it comes to, is that the best use of the resources in the city of St. Louis? Think about the situation with the city. The court has ruled a few months ago that the city has to refund all the city earnings tax. Listen, I pay a city earnings tax. I've paid a city earnings tax since 1992, I've paid a city earnings tax. So I understand what's that about and the theory behind it. But for those who did not work in the city during COVID and started working remotely, all of those individuals are entitled to a refund of the city earnings tax that they paid. In other words, the city tried to keep the city earnings tax even though you weren't really working in the city. And that, to me, is a position that is indefensible. Because the idea of the city earnings tax is this, that if you benefit, like for example, I'm right here, KMOX Studios, downtown St. Louis. I'm driving on roads that are paid for by the city. I ostensibly have the protection of the St. Louis Police Department if they will respond. The fire department is here. I'm benefiting from city services. So why should I not pay for those? I don't have a problem with that. What I do have a problem with is if you were a remote worker living in, say, Creve Coeur and working remotely during COVID, why should you have to pay a city earnings tax? You're not benefiting from police services. You're not benefiting from fire protection. You're not driving on city roads. You're not consuming city water. You're not doing any of those things that would justify taking your tax dollars for using benefits and services provided by the city. But the city wanted to keep it. It took the court to stop that. I'm glad they did. But the city is going to lose hundreds of millions of dollars as a result of those city earnings tax refunds that have to go out to individuals who apply for it. You've got the city crime issues. We have the problems, and of course, that's the number one city issue right now is crime. Crime is going down in certain areas in terms of murders and other things, but it certainly isn't going away, and it's also shifting to different areas of the city. And we can't hire enough police officers. Why? Because the city says we can't afford to pay police in the city what they can go out and earn in the county or other municipalities. So then why are we giving away $52 million to individuals for no benefit to the city? Couldn't we apply that money towards increasing pay for police? Couldn't we put that money towards increasing pay for firefighters? Because when the city has a crime problem, which we do, the nation knows about this. The city of St. Louis is infamous for being the crime capital of the country. How many businesses would love to relocate to the city, but they're afraid to because of crime? How many? And that is an issue that could be resolved, or at least could be mitigated, by putting that $52 million, paying it to the police, instead of simply giving it away. And the other problem that I have with this idea of guaranteed basic income or universal basic income is this. Doesn't it create within the mindset of those who receive that money? Doesn't it create this idea that you're now dependent on the government? You're dependent on the government. It reduces your incentive to go out, and you no longer are required. And you say, well, it's only $500 a month, Brad. Come on, you're not going to be dependent on the government for $500. But it's a mindset. It's a mindset that says, I can only exist if the government gives me money. And that's an awful mindset for a culture, for a country, for a capitalistic society that says you need to go out and earn and make it yourself. And it's a problem to say, I'm just going to sit back and rely on the government. And here's a great example. You remember Pruitt-Igoe? I got to wrap this up quickly. Pruitt-Igoe gave housing to individuals, and what happened? They burned them to the ground. Contrast that with Habitat for Humanity that says you have to put in sweat equity and you have to have a small mortgage, and then we'll give you a house. Why? Because you got to have some skin in the game. Habitat for Humanity works. Pruitt-Igoe did not. The difference is involvement. And giving money away with no expectation of a return creates dependency without creating independence. And that, to me, is the biggest problem with guaranteed basic income. Brad Young in tonight on At Your Service. Stick around for the best of Dave Glover. I will talk to you next Wednesday night right here on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.